Right now, you're listening to the Azeem Digital Asks podcast, the podcast where I, Azeem, talk to some of the top marketers in the industry, find out everything about them, how they got to where they are today, and more importantly, sharing some really useful marketing tips that will help everybody listening to this become better marketers. Stay tuned for another great episode. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Azeem Digital Asks podcast. This episode, we are talking all about marketing strategy and I'm really excited to bring you my guest today. She is the founder of Freedom Strategic Branding and Marketing Agency. She has a PhD in branding. She is a speaker, learning and public supporter, a mentor, and she can be found in high heels and always on the hunt for emerging fashion designers. My guest is Dr. Lee George. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You are more than welcome. Let's get straight into it. So if you could change places with anybody in the world, who would it be and why?
Okay, I have two answers to this. The first is Tracee Ellis Ross. She's an American actress and I love her style and her fashion. So I'd want to change places with her so I could wear everything in her closet. And then my second answer is I would want to trade places with my preteen and teen daughters so that I could relive my teenage years without being intimidated by all of the cliques and just kind of live my best life and be a super confident teenager.
Love that. So yeah, look, welcome to the show. For anybody who does not know who you are, would you mind giving a short introduction to yourself, please?
Sure. So I am a branding and marketing strategist. For over 20 years, I've worked with marketing leaders and their teams in B2B companies, associations, nonprofits, and really help them gain clarity and consensus around their audiences, the challenges that they're struggling with, and their goals, and working with them to develop actionable strategies to reach and persuade audiences. I've worked at agencies small and big, all the way up to Ogilvy, and got to a point that I felt that the traditional agency model was broken. And that's when I decided to found Freedom, which I call my sort of un-agency to signal that I do things differently than traditional agencies.
Awesome. So what a career you've had. So I'm really interested to get into the meat of this episode, which is all about marketing strategy. So let's start from the very beginning. And the reason why I'm about to ask you this question is that certainly over here in the UK, there are several different definitions. But as someone who has had quite a long and varied career, how would you define what a marketing strategy is?
So I would say that a marketing strategy is very surgical and very purposeful. So you are not trying to do whatever you can to get someone's attention and throwing whatever will stick to the wall, kind of in a bid that believes that all tactics are viable. Instead, it is a very concise and specific approach to your marketing goal that accounts for the motivations of the people you're trying to reach, your audience, as well as your own strengths and weaknesses. And that approach then allows you to evaluate what tactics are going to be the best to use to achieve your goals.
Awesome. So just building on from that, where do people, in your opinion, go wrong when they're creating a marketing strategy?
Yeah, I think it's focusing too much on your brand, your products, your services, your features, your benefits. Your marketing strategy should really be built around your audience. So the goal is not to show people, you know, what a better product or service it is you have. The goal of the marketing strategy is to show how people can become a better version of themselves. And that's really the sort of persuasion you're trying to do with your marketing strategy. And so it's really important then to understand, as I said before, the motivations and behaviors of your audience. And I describe that as collecting thick data rather than big data. So it's more about doing qualitative research than kind of what I consider to be really easy quantitative data that all the platforms we use kind of collect for us. that's really decontextualized and doesn't help us understand people and why they do what they do. So I think brands really go wrong when they don't think about and don't understand their audience and instead really focus on just promoting themselves.
Yeah, that's a really interesting answer. Thank you very much for sharing that. And of all the questions that I want to ask you, I think this one is the one that I'm really interested to hear your answer on. So when you pitched to come on the show, you mentioned taking a contrarian view to personas and marketing funnels. So why is that?
So I think, in addition to, I mentioned earlier that I founded my company because I felt that the traditional agency model didn't serve clients. And so I've kind of built my entire business around questioning why, as marketers, why are we doing the things we do? Do they make sense? Do they serve us? Do they help us achieve the goals that we're trying to achieve? And so one of the big things that we all use is the marketing funnel. So I'm going to just start there. We just sort of take it for granted, right? This is kind of the model we all use. It's been applied to customer journey. So we think of a customer journey as a funnel journey, actually, right? So it's awareness, engagement, purchase, loyalty. And so I started to think about this model, why it has this hold on us, and started researching it. And I realized it was a theory developed in 1898 by an ad man, right? So first of all, it's a century old theory that was created at a time that's very different from the time that we find ourselves in, that doesn't account for how in the 21st century we, the fact that there is the internet and so much of buying and learning about brands happens there. So the theory believes that in order to sell something, you have to attract large amounts of people so that eventually, after following this very linear and predetermined path, they will ultimately buy from you. So it's this idea, right, that you can just like cast your net and then some of the people that are caught up in the net will eventually buy from you. Well, this is absurd, right? We know from our own experiences as people and consumers in the world, that's not how it works, right? The process is not linear. It looks kind of like a tangled collection of yarn, right? Where we go like one way, we come back, we reevaluate. And so it just doesn't make sense to use it anymore. And it's also based on this idea. I think that's how this notion of an attention economy has such a huge hold on us, is because we still believe in the marketing funnel. So is there another way? I started asking myself. And then connected to that, personas, on the one hand, you might think these are incredibly valuable because they help us understand our audience better. But the more I worked with them, the more frustrated I became, because it was so easy. They would proliferate so easily, right? Like, how many personas do you need? And constantly different people in an organization would say, well, what about this person? What about that person? And it seemed to be this never-ending proliferation. And I realized that it's because personas are based on identities, that even though people have tried to get away from demographic information by using psychographic data, they still can't get away from identity. So the persona is a CFO or they're a mom. I mean, these are all still demographic categories. And so I became really interested in this theory called jobs to be done. There are a gajillion different kind of permutations of it, but the way I think about it is that people ultimately want to make progress, and they hire things to help them make progress. So they hire products and services to do the job that will help them make progress. And so instead of thinking of a funnel as a way that people think, as the reason that explains why people buy, Jobs to Be Done posits that there are progress-making forces that encourage our adoption of a new solution or prevent us from change. So there are forces that say, currently there are pushes and pulls. So one push is you know, my current solution just isn't working. My car is broken down, or the battery's dead, or it's, you know, an object is physically broken. I need something new. Another push is that you have been given a vision of a better way, of something that's going to help more than your current solution. But then there are also forces that prevent you from taking action, either inertia, things are fine, I don't want to rock the boat, it's too difficult to change, I'm just going to stay where I am, and anxiety. Will this new thing be better than what I'm doing now? So instead of personas, if you think about what are the forces at play that encourage change or keep someone in place, you can use that awareness to build messaging and experiences that help generate demand for your product and then overcome uncertainty. So that's sort of what I am more, the sort of approach to marketing and audience and understanding of audience that's different from the marketing funnel and personas.
That is really, really interesting. Thank you very much for sharing that. You made me think about sort of how that would translate, for example, in a meeting room when people are allowed to meet each other, for example. So let's say, I'm going to sidestep for a minute here. So let's say you're in a room talking to a prospect or a potential client, and they've had several other companies or agencies come in first, and they've all talked about the funnel. So essentially, that's all they know. You're about to talk to them about something completely different. What is the best way you can get that across to them?
So that's something very similar to that happened to me with a client. So I kind of started working with Jobs to be Done in the middle of this project. So I had scoped out one approach, and then I sort of came to them, guess what? I have a better idea, which is kind of like, yeah, you could imagine clients being like, I'm sorry, what? So what I did was I actually used the pandemic as an example. So to show them that it wasn't an issue of awareness that were preventing people from knowing who they are or buying from them. It was literally progress-making forces. And I kind of walked through kind of how the pandemic impacted the behavior of their audience. And it was, you know, light bulbs went off. They're like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. But then I also backed it up with user research. So to really understand what the pushes and pulls were, I had already interviewed a bunch of their customers so that I could come in credibly and say, here are the specific pushes and pulls. Let me map this out for you. And again, you know, what I love about doing audience research is that it is a level of credibility that leadership does not argue with. Because I'm telling them, look, your customers told me that. They're not going to argue with their customers. So it becomes an incredibly compelling kind of foundation for this sort of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are a lot of similarities from what I'm taking away from here between Jobs to be Done and what is called nudge theory over here, where essentially you nudge people towards an action or a goal. Something that I don't know a lot about, but I've heard the term being used quite a lot in terms of nudging people rather than the traditional sort of funnel. So you mentioned COVID there. How has COVID impacted the way that you create and sort of, well, effectively sell marketing strategies?
That's a great question. I feel like in many ways, and oddly, my network has expanded because I've been so desperate for connection. I mean, I still get referrals, right? So that happens regardless of whether we can be outside of our house or not. But yeah. I feel like too, I've really looked for opportunities to connect with community. So for example, I've become much more active on Twitter and sought conversations with people. LinkedIn, at the beginning of the pandemic, slightly before the pandemic, I had already decided to do this, was to post something every day. And I give myself an hour because I don't want to get caught up in perfectionism. My goal is to be able to express an idea and just get it out there to see how people respond. So that's been really interesting because I think we've all kind of moved online with the pandemic. So it's been great it's really helped me kind of evolve my thinking and as a result, I think kind of not sell differently so much, but maybe change what I am selling and how I position myself.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thanks very much for sharing that. It's always interesting for me to learn from my guests how the pandemic has kind of shaped their offering and how they're working. I wanted to touch on this sort of second half of the episode, specifically on your PhD in branding, which is really interesting for me to learn more about. So what sort of things have you picked up from your academic career that you've been able to transfer over to your professional career?
So my PhD is sort of interesting. So I didn't do it through a business school or a marketing department at all. It was through a department called the History and Theory of Visual Culture. So it was technically an art history department, but you could study any form of visual cultural production. And so I was really interested in graphic design because I felt that in the 20th century, which is when I got my degree, that was really what was shaping our understanding of meaning and one another and power and all of these things, right? Versus fine art. And so it was kind of in the course of that that I started studying the emergence of corporate identity systems and branding and ultimately kind of focused on that for my dissertation. And so because I come at marketing from a kind of a non-traditional way, I think what I really learned from my academic career was really a love and passion for research that I think a lot of marketers aren't really trained in that per se, that you kind of come at it through like anthropology or ethnography. And then also just critical thinking skills. So kind of thinking, questioning things, trying to make sure they make sense for what you're trying to do. And then finally, I would say too, is graduate school is really where I started public speaking. And so it was kind of my first opportunity to take my ideas and to present them to audiences and get feedback. And so it's still something I think is so important to intellectual development. And I continue to do today because it's not, from a selfish perspective, it helps me evolve my ideas, but it's also a form of teaching, which I think is really important and I enjoy doing as well.
Yeah, definitely. So again, I'm going to sidestep, forgive me. Was a PhD always the goal for you? Or did you just sort of stumble upon it? How did you arrive at the decision like, right, I'm going to do a PhD?
Yeah, well, I think initially I thought I wanted to be a professor because I just love learning and I love research. And I think once I was in academia, I realized the politics are so small and kind of unimportant. And the more research I did and the more work I did, the more I felt that I want to actually be working alongside the kinds of people that I'm studying. And so after getting my, you know, I kind of set the goal to get the PhD, but then I quickly realized I don't want to stay in academia anymore and kind of pivoted to corporate.
Awesome. And then I'm going to touch on some of the things that I've mentioned in your introduction, the fact that you're learning in public support and that you're also a mentor. So my question now is, if you were mentoring somebody, a young person who was very green, very new into their career, given the sort of global situation we find ourselves in now, would you advise that they, well, I won't put answers into your mouth, what would you advise they do? Study or just go straight into hands dirty work? What would you advise?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, I don't think that you need a marketing degree to be a great marketer. You know, because marketing changes so fast, and I don't think that school can keep up. And I think you really learn as much kind of on the job as probably more than if you were in school. Because it's not just technical skill, it's people skill, it's politics, it's navigating difficult situations, kinds of things that you can't get in school necessarily. And so I think I would tell them to just to jump into it. And I think for young people, there's such a pressure to kind of feel like they should they should go into a particular area because everyone else is doing it or because it's cool or they feel like they should for some reason. And I really feel like they need to follow their passion and what they're really interested in. My career path, as you've kind of guessed, has been kind of zigzag. And I've learned as much from things that I didn't enjoy doing as those things that I did. And so to kind of follow your passion, what you enjoy doing, and then kind of let that lead you on to the next thing.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much. I do have one last question, and it's a slightly tricky one. So I've thought of it, so I may stumble as I ask you it, but you can hire one person and you have two candidates potential. So candidate A has a very academic background, lots of research, lots of studying, but no practical experience of the industry. Candidate B is the polar opposite, lots of practical experience, but less of the sort of theory and academic background. Which of the two do you hire?
So you've made it this binary choice, right? Either you have experience or academic. So I think for me, it really comes down to, how do they think? You know, are they critical thinkers? Are they curious? Do they find, because I believe that every client is fascinating, right? Because there's always something to learn. And so I feel like, especially if you're interested in branding or marketing strategy, curiosity, a love of research, empathy, those sorts of things are much more important than either real world experience or necessarily academic credentials.
I love that. I love that answer. It's brilliant. Thank you very much. And for the listeners, that wasn't a pre-prepared answer. I definitely have to put you on the spot there. And you absolutely nailed it. Thank you very much. Sadly, we are coming towards the end of the podcast, which is a shame because I could genuinely talk to you for, I would say hours, but it's very soon going to be my bedtime. So I could talk to you for another hour, let's say. If you could narrow it down to a handful of things, let's say up to three things that you would want people to take away from this episode with you, what would they be?
I would say stop competing for attention. I would also say market better customers, not better products or services. And really emphasize thick data over big data.
That is awesome. And I have one last question for you before I ask you for your details and let you wrap up the show. I am somebody listening to this episode when it goes out. I run an agency. My strategy is very much set in stone, but after listening to this episode, I realize that I need to change my strategy. Where do I begin?
I would say start with your audience. Make sure you really know who your audience is. I feel like a lot of organizations say, oh yeah, we know who our audience is. And then once you kind of ask them questions and poke at it, different people and different parts of the organization have a different perspective on who the customer actually is. So understand who you're actually marketing to and get to know them, interview them, talk to them, understand kind of what drives them, what scares them, what motivates them, what challenge are they facing that you're in a position to help them overcome.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Promise there's going to be no more sidestep questions now, other than if people wanted to find out more about you or your company or contact you, follow you on social media, how could they do that?
So you can visit my website, which is find-freedom.co. I am on LinkedIn under Dr. Lee George and Twitter at Lee George. And on Instagram. So if you're more interested in my fashion than maybe following my marketing ideas, you can get that on Instagram.
Yep, I'm going to do that definitely. I think I've got 30 Instagram followers. So I'll be doing that directly after the show. Doctor, thank you very much for being an absolutely brilliant guest. This has been a fascinating episode. I'm already looking forward to editing this, and I genuinely mean that because I listened back to it and I think this has been brilliant. So, as always, this is the part of the episode where I essentially shut up, give you the last word on your episode. So, within reason, the final word on your episode goes to you.
I would say don't raise your voice, improve your argument. So again, don't make it about trying to get attention and kind of flooding the airways with messages. Instead, create really smart, audience-focused messaging and marketing.
So that was another great episode in the bag. I'm really enjoying hearing from some brilliant people in this industry. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow me on Spotify. Please leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you are using. Tell a friend to tell a friend, and hopefully see you for the next episode.